This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, as I alluded to with Wayne McCurry and Rowan Williams a little bit earlier on, and Andrew Duvenage as well, while we've seen a very long in the tooth bull market over in the US public markets, it has stretched valuations, and it internationally has seen a real rise in interest in alternative asset classes like private equity. Here in South Africa, that's probably not the scenario, as we see South African shares really depressed and we see value investors piling in, but we do have some very interesting themes buffeting the local private equity industry. So I thought as we kick off 2020, we could peer into our crystal balls and invite our panel of experts to wade into how they see the alternative asset class faring in this year of hindsight, not only here in South Africa, but in sub-Saharan Africa as well. With that, I'd like to welcome firstly in studio, John Bellew, who's head of private equity at Bowman's. John, always good to see you.
Great to be here, Michael. Thanks.
On the line, we've got Tanya van Lille, who's the chief executive of SAVCA, which is the Southern African Venture Capital and Private Equity Association, the industry representative body. 22, I think, this year. Tanya, how are you doing?
Yes, we're definitely going into the adult years. Doing really well, and always great to be on the show, Michael.
Excellent. JP Faree is joining us as well, head of investor relations at private equity firm Metier. JP, always a pleasure. Been a while. Hope you're keeping well.
Great to speak to you, Michael.
And on the line from London, I think we're having one or two hassles trying to get our guest from AVCA on the line, Anitan Abasanjo Adaleye. So we'll continue trying that line. In the meantime, John, perhaps you could kick us off here. And obviously there are merits, particularly in a relatively low return environment, to including alternative assets. And we've had a very low returning listed environment in South Africa for the last 5 years. What impact is this having on interest in the asset class?
I think we continue to see interest in the asset class grow. I think it's been a difficult market for fundraising, particularly where you're looking to raise international capital. It's often taking time, depending on the type of fund that you raise and the investment geography that you look at. But definitely we are seeing greater understanding of the asset class. We are seeing family offices come into the market. We are seeing, I think, more capital raised for the venture capital end of the market, which is encouraging. And I think, as Tanya said, the industry as a whole is healthy. I think the problem is not an industry problem at the moment. It's a market problem.
Tanya, just to add on to that, the industry as a whole is healthy, and being a market problem, this is patient capital. So funds are raised, they do have to be deployed within a specified time period, but GPs don't have to deploy immediately. So they can be strategic with their deployment and wait for the right time. What have you seen on the fundraising front in particular? How difficult has it been for funds to go out there and raise new capital?
Well, Michael, when we speak to our members, we hear that how difficult fundraising is, both locally and internationally. Specifically internationally, it's very difficult to sell a SA Inc. story if we're seeing the problems we're seeing with state-owned enterprises, in-party fighting. So there's a lot of macroeconomic factors that affect fundraising that's beyond the control of the fund managers when they do fundraise. So they have to sell South Africa as an investment destination, and then also private equity as an asset class. What we've seen is that private equity is now not only competing for capital with other private equity fund managers, but with the alternative space. So institutional investors have options not only from an asset class perspective, but also geography perspective. So the Southern Africa region is also competing for capital with the likes of East and West Africa, as well as Southeast Asia.
JP, you've today announced the first close of Metier's Sustainable Capital Fund 2, the MSC 2. It's your 10th capital pool for the Metier team, so a really impressive track record of capital raising. In this market, how difficult have you found it to reach first close? How long has it taken?
Sure. So it's definitely taken a little bit longer than anticipated, but it always does, as John alludes to. We've been on the road for just on 9 months when we issued our original placement documentation, and that's taken another additional 3 or 4 to actually conclude all the various legal agreements to conclude, as you point out, the $113 odd million that we raised for our next renewable energy and clean infrastructure fund, focusing also on the water and waste sectors. So, yes, it is a tough environment with a lot of uncertainties that are not necessarily always in control of the fund manager. But there's also some introspection that is potentially needed in the industry in relation to the performance, because this is an illiquid asset class. Our trade-off at the end of the day is, if we are not beating listed peers as an offset to the illiquidity, we should be out of a job. And then some of the more rigor that has been put into focus around impacts on the environment, measuring those impacts, ESG elements, etc. And that's where I think the South African market and potentially the African market is very well positioned in relation to other emerging markets, where we've had a lot of development finance institution support over a number of years that have really started to push those envelopes in relation to impact and being a good corporate citizen, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And we, I hope, are streets ahead in terms of some of the other developed markets and some of the other emerging markets.
And within that, John, there is a huge opportunity. I think it was at the private equity, the SABCA conference at Spear earlier this year, one of the big themes being this large intergenerational wealth transfer that we're about to see in the family office space, and a younger class of investor that is a lot more focused on, when you look at environmental, social, governance issues, certainly on the environmental and the social side of that equation. Here, as JP pointed out, in South Africa, we are a little bit ahead of the curve. And so hopefully we can start using that and leveraging that to our advantage. The challenge, though, is the return figure that JP alluded to. Why have we struggled to show consistent outperformance?
Oh, I don't know that the industry has struggled. I think Tanya will have the stats, but I do think that we've consistently outperformed the listed markets. And I think one of the themes around sustainability is people say, you know, you're doing good while you're doing well. And the fact that you're making a meaningful return on your investment doesn't mean that you have to have a fund which is not sustainable. And I think particularly the DFI community over the last few years has really pushed fund managers into ensuring that the portfolio companies that they invest in get their act together and improve their whole ESG environment. So, I mean, I agree with JP. You know, I think a lot of the stuff we're doing in Africa is greenfield, so we have the opportunity in the energy space and the renewable space to build businesses from the ground up that are much more environmentally friendly. And I agree that that space in particular is a real opportunity for Africa, including South Africa.
And JP, that is the focus of your fund. I'd just like to bounce the ball back to you, though, and just to get some clarity on what you meant by justifying the illiquidity premium. Has there been a cause for concern when you look at perhaps dollar-based returns that South Africa isn't quite as attractive as other markets?
Sure. So if you compare it to the performance of, for example, the mid-market private equity industry in the US, yes, we have definitely underperformed. They are doing, on a net basis in dollars, you know, anything between 10 and 12%, whereas in the South African context, that is more in the region of 5 to 7. So yes, we have underperformed in relation to that. But in comparison to the African continent, no, we can hold our head up quite high in relation to that. But the point is that because you are, in essence, committing to a fund and making investments over 5 years and then looking to exit those investments in the following 5 years of the life of a private equity fund, the liquidity options for an investor into a private equity fund are quite limited. Whereas if you're trading on any stock exchange, or most stock exchanges, not necessarily all of them on the African continent, you do have a lot of opportunity for earlier liquidity. And the premium that we need to provide for that is an outperformance. And the point I was making was that, to amplify what John was saying, that the ESG aspects and ensuring that the portfolio companies are good corporate citizens, doing the right thing, in terms of all their various stakeholders is an additional benefit of private equity, specifically in Africa.
Right, doing well while doing good as well. I believe we've got Initan on the line now, so welcome to the show, Initan. When we look at Africa and sub-Saharan Africa, five seemingly long years ago, the African private equity space was experiencing something of a heyday. 2015, Abraj had just raised $1.4 billion in fresh capital, and you fast forward 5 years, and it's now all about how do we mop up from the Abraj debacle. We saw fines levied at CEO, amongst others, criminally indicted. It could happen anywhere in the world. I'm not saying this is a risk unique to Africa, but it would be churlish not to point out that it has tainted the African private equity industry. How is the industry responding?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Michael. It's a pleasure to be joining you at this point. And I think it's fair, it is fair to say that Abraj has had some impact, and it's not something that can be ignored. But nonetheless, in terms of what we're seeing in terms of PE activity in Africa, our fundraising numbers for that at the half-year point for 2019 were actually strong and indicative of it being higher than the previous year. We're collating the full-year 2019 numbers at the minute, and we'll see where that lands. But I think, broadly speaking, it's recognized that it's been an idiosyncratic event. It's really been specific to the GP, and it's not really emblematic or symbolizing the African PE industry at all. But and I'm sure the other people on this call can bear witness to the fact that it's something that does come up in discussion. But I think what it's prompted is greater focus on operational due diligence from both the GPs and LPs, and that's broadly speaking a good thing for the industry. So it's not been as damaging as perhaps was originally anticipated, but there is certainly more time and more focus being spent on operational due diligence for fund managers at the moment.
Looking at sectors across the continent, JP Farese on the line, and Metier announced the first close of their sustainable capital fund, $130 million, investing in renewable energy, in energy efficiency, water and waste management. So those really seem to be the hotbeds of activity at the moment. Outside of that, what else do you see as sectors that are attracting private equity investments at the moment?
Certainly, the renewable energy space has been attracting a lot of attention and focus. We are seeing, I think, the general theme of that is greater sector specialization and focus, and that includes things that are focusing on things like climate. We had the first climate fund that focuses on emerging markets, including Africa, last year with Climate Fund Managers One, and obviously that also encompasses renewables, but also things like water, wind, and looking at broader climate themes. Also, technology keeps rising in terms of the investments that we're seeing, and that includes both early stage VC and later stage VC activity. So the VC space obviously has been hugely rising in the last few years. We've seen year-on-year significant increases in terms of VC activity, driven by a greater focus on technology enablement across broad sectors and things.
It's great to see that, and to your point as well, John, that you're seeing a lot more investments and funds being raised into VC-type vehicles. Obviously, there's a lot going into Section 12J as well, and there's a whole school of thought and debate around whether a lot of those hotels and accommodation-type VCCs are true venture capital. But if you just look at the survey, Tanya, that Savco produces, it's clear that there is a big uptick in funds flowing into so-called traditional venture capital. I see you've slightly altered your conference for this year at Spear, having the Venture Capital Conference at a different venue. Could you tell me a little bit more about the thinking behind that?
Yes, so Michael, we really want to treat both conferences as two different events and products. So the Venture Capital Conference will still take place in Cape Town in the Stellenbosch area, but a different venue, the Hasendal Wine Estate, on the Tuesday, while the Private Equity Conference will still take place on the Wednesday and Thursday at Spear. Because we find it's two different audiences, two different messages, and that they really want the necessary time to be focused on the conversations that we need to have to be able to grow these two sectors.
even though we do still see a lot of overlap. And as Samantha Pockroy said earlier this year, a lot of the private equity funds sort of bumping into the VC space as well. We're bouncing around a little bit, and I digressed on that point. JP, I want to come back to the Sustainable Capital Fund too. Lots of DFIs that you've raised funds from here. Do you think there is still a lack of pension or institutional fund money going into these funds into Africa? And how, I think I know the answer to that. It looks quite clearly like there is. How, I suppose the second part of my question is more important. How do we increase the amount of institutional pension fund type money into the asset class?
Sure. So I'll answer the first part first, Michael. In the South African context, no, that's not the case. There's a lot of institutional support from pension funds, asset managers, high net worths, family offices, and other aggregators in the South African context. Yes, that has been a lumpy ride. It's not always been a continual linear uptick, but there definitely is a large amount of support from the South African institutions into the asset class. That's not necessarily the case across the rest of the continent, although it's starting to develop in certain parts of North Africa, and definitely in Kenya and Ethiopia, as well as a little bit in West Africa, Ghana and Nigeria. So yes, there is definitely room for more in relation to appreciation of this asset class and interest from it from both local institutional investors as well as international institutional investors. And then what is the secret recipe? I think would boil down to performance, but it also boils down to the points that John raised right at the very beginning, when some of the market factors at play make it very difficult to remain attractive. And that's always going to be something that is cyclical in nature, rather. And you need to be able to run through those in a way. But yeah, it would boil down to me for performance at the end of the day. And then offsetting some type of emerging market premium that should be paid by a US investor managing billions for a pension fund that has got options on, you know, within a 6-hour radius from their offices, as opposed to a 14-hour flight to somewhere in Africa.
Yeah, very good point. And any turn, I was reading an article by Daniel Johnson of Bayless Emerging Markets today, and he said that there are some glimmers of hope. We've seen USLPs attending roadshows, Africa-focused conferences and the like, and he mentioned that the Chicago Teachers Pension Fund made its first allocation to African markets private equity last year. It's a very modest allocation, $20 million. But it's a start.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sorry, Etienne, there have been a number of other institutional investors that have invested in the late 90s as well. And some of those have continued over a period of time. But as I said, it's not been a linear increase. It's been quite a lumpy ride. But yes, there definitely are some green shoots and definitely a heightened amount of interest in the African continent.
And anytime from your perspective, are you seeing a lot more of the US-type pension fund money become interested in Africa? It certainly fits with the BlackRock, Larry Fink-type themes of increasing focus on ESG issues, and many of those climate issues are going to intersect and impact on Africa perhaps the hardest.
That's right, Michael. So we are certainly seeing increasing interest or a change in the cycle. So for a few years, I think, after the Africa Rising narrative was at its peak, we've seen more subdued interest. But there seems to be the possibility of us arriving as a turning point. For example, at our annual conference in Nairobi in Kenya last year, we actually had a record number of US LPs in attendance. And for us, it was a significant achievement and really for us indicative of that increasing interest playing around, as we've mentioned, with the themes of ESG and impact and also diversification. That view that the continued growth and the cyclicality of these markets, that the growth and the strong performance that we've been seeing out of the US for developed markets and maybe Asia for emerging markets might not continue forever. So it's time for them to start exploring other markets that could be at a turning point relative to those.
John, I know your area of expertise and real favorite of yours is fund structures. That's something that continually evolves. Any interesting innovations that you've seen in the last 12 months and what do you expect over the next 12?
Look, I think that structures respond to the needs of general partners and of investors. I think a lot of the issues that drive that debate have to do with what is an appropriate time frame to extract meaningful value out of African private equity investments. And some of them go to the liquidity points that JP was talking about, where if you have a long-dated vehicle or a listed vehicle, you can offer liquidity to your investors, albeit that they're likely to take a haircut on the price. So the model continues to evolve. You know, in some jurisdictions, for example, we're working on a fund in Kenya at the moment where they don't have a limited partnership as we know and understand it. So we are having to take what's available in the local market and mold that commercially into something that works. I just think we're seeing the universe evolve. We're seeing managers responding to the needs of their individual LPs, and within the broad framework there are now a variety of structures that you can use to get to the same outcome. But to say that there's a particular move one way or another, not really. I think it's just there's now a greater variety available, and you tailor your fund to suit your needs and those of your investors.
Horses for courses approach. It is fascinating if you get down into the fine detail. We could probably spend the next 90 minutes just discussing that. John Bellew, the head of private equity at Bowmans, unfortunately that's all the time we have for. It's certainly set to be a fantastic SAVCA 2020 conference. Under the banner of Connect, Collaborate and Commit. So, Tanya, I'm going to have you back on the show just to talk directly to the themes this year of Connect, Collaborate and Commit. That was also Tanya van Lille, CEO of SAVCA, joined by JP Faree, who's Head of Investor Relations at Metier, and Enitan Obasanjo Adeleye, who's the Director and Head of Research at AVCA, which is the African Private Equity and Venture Capital Association. Well, that's a wrap from the team tonight. Thanks to sound engineers Matabataba Debe and Mwanda Lobe in Cape Town, producer Andres Mashlangu for manning the phones so manfully. Saad Mohammed in the Jazz Lounge in Cape Town for you, and in Gauteng, Carolyn Stain is up next with Winding Down. Good night.